Okay, so we've finished the readings that I was going to do on the section of the five hindrances, and the next part of the Dhamma Anupassana is around the five khandhas, five aggregates, and Dhamma Anupassana forms the basis for insight practice, as it hones in on the basis of experience. Say the next section of contemplation of phenomena, which is how Bhikkhu Bodhi has been translating Dhamma and Dhamma Anupassana. So the contemplation of phenomena highlights that which we take as self. The way we normally attach to the assumption of self is through tanha, in that this is mine, mana, this I am, ditti, this is myself. From the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, we chant that on a regular, e tanha ma e so hamasami e so me atati. This is mine, this I am, this is myself. and of course that's how in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, I won't read it, but it's that's the Buddha's first formulation of the relationship between the five khandhas and not self. I'm going to read today the Majjhima 109, which is the Mahapurnima Sutta, the greater discourse on the full moon night. Okay, thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savati in the Eastern Park, in the palace of Migara's mother. On that occasion, on the Uposatha day of the 15th, on the full moon night, the Blessed One was seated in the open, surrounded by the Sangha of bhikkhus. Then a certain bhikkhu rose from his seat, arranged his upper robe on one shoulder, and extending his hands in reverential salutation towards the Blessed One, said to him, "Venerable Sir, I would ask the Blessed One about a certain point. The Blessed One would grant me an answer to my question." "Sit on your own seat, bhikkhu, and ask what you like." So the bhikkhu sat on his own seat and said to the Blessed One, "Are these not, Venerable Sir, the five aggregates affected by clinging? That is, the material form aggregate affected by clinging, the feeling aggregate affected by clinging, the perception aggregate affected by clinging, the formations aggregate affected by clinging, and the consciousness aggregate affected by clinging. These bhikkhus are the five aggregates affected by clinging, that is," and just goes through them all again, "through the consciousness aggregate affected by clinging." Saying, "Good, Venerable Sir," the bhikkhu delighted and rejoiced in the Blessed One's words. Then he asked him a further question. "But, Venerable Sir, in what are these five aggregates affected by clinging rooted?" "These five aggregates affected by clinging are rooted in desire, bhikkhu." And the word that he uses is chanda, as opposed to tanha, which of course the commentary glosses immediately to tanha. "Venerable Sir, is that clinging the same as these five aggregates affected by clinging? Or is the clinging something apart from the five aggregates affected by clinging?" "Bhikkhu, that clinging is neither the same as these five aggregates affected by clinging, nor is the clinging something apart from the five aggregates affected by clinging. It is the desire and lust in regard to the five aggregates affected by clinging that is the clinging there. But, Venerable Sir, can there be diversity in the desire and lust regarding these five aggregates affected by clinging?" "There can be, bhikkhu," the Blessed One said. Here, Bhikkhu, someone thinks thus. May my material form be thus in the future. May my feeling be thus in the future. May my perception be thus in the future. May my formations be thus in the future. May my consciousness be thus in the future. Thus there is diversity in the desire and lust regarding these five aggregates affected by clinging. But, Venerable Sir, in what way does the term aggregates apply to the aggregates? Bhikkhu, any kind of material form whatever, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, this is the material form aggregate. Any kind of feeling whatever, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, this is the feeling aggregate. Any kind of perception, whatever, goes through that, far or near, this is the perception aggregate. Any kind of formations, whatever, whether far or near, this is the formation to aggregate. Any kind of consciousness, whatever, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, this is the consciousness aggregate. It is in this way, Bhikkhu, that the term aggregate applies to the aggregates. What is the cause and condition, Venerable Sir, for the manifestation of the material form aggregate? What is the cause and condition for the manifestation of the feeling aggregate, the perception aggregate, the formations aggregate, the consciousness aggregate? The four great elements, Bhikkhu, are the cause and condition for the manifestation of the material form aggregate. Contact is the cause and condition for the manifestation of the feeling aggregate. Contact is the cause and condition for the manifestation of the perception aggregate. Contact is the cause and condition for the manifestation of the formations aggregate. Mentality, materiality, nama-rupa, is the cause and condition for the manifestation of the consciousness aggregate. Venerable Sir, how does identity view come to be? So, sakkhaya ditti. Here, Bhikkhu, an untaught, ordinary person who has no regard for noble ones and is unskilled and undisciplined in their Dhamma, who has no regard for true men and is unskilled and undisciplined in their Dhamma, regards material form as self, or self as possessed of material form, or material form as in self, or self as in material form. And of course, the same four ways of clinging or holding, regarding, in concerning feeling, perception, formations. So here, Bhikkhu, an untaught, ordinary person who has no regard for noble ones, and is unskilled and undisciplined in their Dhamma, who has no regard for true men, and is unskilled and undisciplined in their Dhamma, regards consciousness as self, or self as possessed of consciousness, or consciousness as in self, or self as in consciousness. That is how identity view comes to be. But, Venerable Sir, how does identity view not come to be? Here, Bhikkhu, a well-taught, noble disciple who has regard for noble ones and is skilled and disciplined in their Dhamma, has regard for true men and is skilled and disciplined in their Dhamma, does not regard material form as self, or self is possessed of material form, or material form as in self, or self is in material form. He does not regard feeling as self, perception as self, formations as self, consciousness as self, or self as possessed of consciousness, or consciousness as in self, or self as in consciousness. That is how identity view does not come to be. What, Venerable Sir, is the gratification, what is the danger, and what is the escape in the case of material form? What is the gratification, what is the danger, and what is the escape in the case of feeling, in the case of perception, in the case of formations, in the case of consciousness? That pleasure and joy, Bhikkhu, that arise in dependence on material form, that is the gratification in the case of material form. Material form is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change. This is the danger in the case of material form. The removal of desire and lust, the abandonment of desire and lust for material form, that is the escape in the case of material form. The pleasure and joy that arise in dependence on feeling, in dependence on perception, in dependence on formation, in dependence on consciousness, that is the gratification in the case of consciousness. Consciousness is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change. That is the danger in the case of consciousness. The removal of desire and lust, the abandonment of desire and lust for consciousness, this is the escape in the case of consciousness. Venerable Sir, how does one know, how does one see that in regard to this body, with its consciousness and all external signs, there is no eye-making, mind-making, and underlying tendency to conceit? Bhikkhu, any kind of material form whatever, whether past or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, one sees all material form as it actually is with proper wisdom thus, this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. Any kind of feeling whatever, any kind of perception whatever, any kind of formations whatever, any kind of consciousness whatever, one sees all consciousness as it actually is with proper wisdom thus, this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. It is when one knows and sees thus in regard to this body with its consciousness and all external signs, there is no eye-making, mind-making, or underlying tendency to conceit. Then, in the mind of a certain bhikkhu, this thought arose. So it seems, material form is not self, feeling is not self, perception is not self, formations are not self, consciousness is not self. What self, then, will actions done by the not-self affect? So there's already a self-view arising. Then the Blessed One, knowing in his mind the thought in the mind of that bhikkhu, addressed the bhikkhus thus. It is possible, bhikkhus, that some misguided man here, obtuse and ignorant, with his mind dominated by craving, might think that he can outstrip the dispensations, the teacher's dispensation thus. So it seems, material form is not self, feeling is not self, perception is not self, consciousness is not self, our formations are not self, consciousness is not self. What self then will actions done by the not-self affect? Now, bhikkhus, you have been trained by me through interrogation on various occasions in regard to various things. Bhikkhus, what do you think? Is material form permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself. No, Venerable Sir. Bhikkhus, what do you think? Is feeling, of course, I'm going through the whole thing, is feeling, perception, formations, is consciousness permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself. No, Venerable Sir. Therefore, bhikkhus, any kind of material form whatever, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, all material form should be seen as it actually is with proper wisdom thus. This is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. Any kind of feeling whatever, any kind of perception whatever, any kind of formations whatever, any kind of consciousness whatever. All consciousness should be seen as it actually is, with proper wisdom thus, this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. Seeing thus, a well-taught noble disciple becomes disenchanted with material form, disenchanted with feeling, disenchanted with perception, disenchanted with formations, disenchanted with consciousness. Being disenchanted, he becomes dispassionate. Through dispassion, his mind is liberated. When it is liberated, there comes the knowledge. It is liberated. He understands. Birth is destroyed. The holy life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming to any state of being. This is what the Blessed One said. The bhikkhus were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. Now, while this discourse was being spoken, through not clinging, the minds of 60 bhikkhus were liberated from the taints. And another effective discourse. So that there's some familiar themes there that are tied together in this one sutta. One is the, or one draw attention to, of course, is the distinction between, say, the five aggregates and the five aggregates affected by clinging, in that the five aggregates are just this base of experience, are, say, not problematic in and of themselves, although there is a certain burden that's with it. One of the suttas, Paralawe Pancha Khanda, that the five khandas are a burden or something heavy to carry around, but not necessarily conducive to dukkha. It isn't until it's the when they're affected by clinging, upadana khanda, that they are that they're a source of dukkha. And of course, that's where the like in the morning chanting, where we chant, go through all the different kinds of manifestations of dukkha, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair, all of that. But in brief, the five focuses of the grasping mind are dukkha. So that's the short form version of what's problematic. Then the, because it goes through the ways of the how following that structure in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta of reflecting on the experience of the five aggregates. As a means of pulling undoing the upadana, the clinging. Also the manifestation of these aggregates, the four great elements being the cause and condition for the form aggregate, having the nama rupa, mentality, materiality, is cause for manifestation of consciousness, and then contact with the say the external sense base, the internal sense base, and then consciousness itself is the aspect of contact, and that's for the arising of feeling, for perception, and mental formations. The 20 forms of Sakkaya Ditti, having identity, establishing of identity, so that sense of seeing the, so this material form as self. This is what is myself. This, whether it's form, feeling, perception, formations, consciousness, or self, as possessed of the self-possessing material form, in the sense of that's the self is the core, and then it's manifests in the material form or feeling perception, and then the material form is in self. Self is in material form. These are different, how do you say, aberrations or deluded ways of formulating a sense of that quality. This is myself. This is what I am. This is self. So that having a base in these five bases of experience. And then of course, one doesn't grasp and cling unless there was some reason for it. And of course, that's mostly around the sense of gratification. There's some pleasurable aspect, some sense of that it seems to be worthwhile. And so the Buddha doesn't negate pleasure and joy arising from experience, but that forms a base for clinging and attachment. And then the danger, of course, is that there is the one is constantly being either separated, seeing a change, having some kind of unsatisfactory experience arising out of those five bases of experience, those five aggregates, and then that the escape, the way out, is that relinquishing of desire and clinging, and that that how we regard this sense of I-making, mind-making, underlying tendency to conceit. That's ahankara, mamankara, mahananusaya, which is another way that we cling to cling to experience. This sutta covers a lot of different bases of reflection on the five khandhas and how the self is establishes itself, that perception of self. Okay. Any questions? Yeah.
I noticed that nama rupa is the possibility arising from consciousness.
But yeah.
Is nama rupa usually identified as the
Actually, that's generally how it's identified. I mean, it's not. If you go through the, what is it?
Feeling, perception, intention, chetana, manasikara, and
pasa. Pasa, yeah, pasa is included in that. So that as well as attention, the way that attention functions.
But they're conjoined, not disjoined.
They're conjoined. They are not disjoined. Yes. Yeah. It's not a reason to be saying, "Oh, this is something completely separate." It's not. And they.
This is with the two sheaths of breeze.
Yes, that's a. But that's that. Sariputta's like a Sariputta, and that that they. So an exposition on the dependent origination, and then the symbol of the two sheaves of reeds need to prop up each other, so that it doesn't stand alone.
I was just wondering if from Achinja or any other sort of modern translations, the initial questions that are asked, it's like I really don't get a sense for where the question is coming from, so I read Buddha's response. It's like,
oh, right.
Just the wording of it.
It's a bit obscure, yeah.
Yeah.
The commentary, Majjhima commentary, says that Bhikkhu who's asking the questions is actually an arhat. He's a teacher of these 60 other bhikkhus who lived with him in the forest, driving meditation. With their teacher's guidance, they had developed various insight knowledges, but could not attain the paths and fruits. Therefore, their teacher brought them to see the Buddha in the hope that he could guide them to the supramundane attainments. The teacher asked the questions, not because he has doubts, but in order to dispel, so that being a foil for the Buddha to give these explanations. That's a commentary. So that I don't know that other than that, there are a little bit obscure, but it's not, I think that, whether it's just the use of language, but that sense of having to, all these different permutations and really trying to see the nuances of these, because the Buddha, I think is fairly. I think that was a unique application of a principle of classification, like in the Buddha's time, that this that kind of looking on experience through the lens of these five khandhas, and many of the. Of the monks of the Buddha's time had been wanderers in other traditions, and of course also in just the nature of Indian religious and spiritual seeking. There's a lot of tends to be a lot of philosophical debate and discourse, so that what may the bhikkhu himself wanting some clarification, really exactly trying to pin it down, exactly what the Buddha's meaning. This is just my own speculation, I think in terms of philosophical debate, there isn't another culture that is as kind of varied and nuanced as Indian. You think what of all the other religions, what they're sort of talking about in the world, even up to to the modern time, it's pretty rinky-dink, actually. The Buddha, the first discourse the long discourses, 60 different kinds of 62 different kinds of speculative view, because that's what they debated, and they held different views, and they staked their claims on religious seeking in these different camps, and they got together in different parks and debated about it, it's pretty. Something quite unique in kind of religion and philosophy. I think we're still in the West. You think it's the statistics for America. The amount of people that take a literal interpretation of the Bible, and a very, very black and white, limited view in terms of God and the soul and birth and it's very, very limited. I think it's even over 40% or something. Literal interpretation of the Bible. That's a lot of people.
My sense is that around the time of the Greeks and then in early Christianity, there was a great spread of views. That there was much more discussion. There was a long list of the book of Catholics. There's a long list of the old heresies.
They're still pretty limited. So most of it's heresies around the assumption of the nature of God.
Oh, my question, I don't know if this is the right time for it either, but you have two bhikkhu who thought about, what self is it in
here? Oh, right, right.
That's that place where karma kind of comes into the question.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's sort of like just karma and rebirth and what the...
So it seemed I could be that big,
right.
Sympathize with the question. If the teacher is saying that there's no self in any of these khandhas,
yeah,
then it sounds almost like he's saying there isn't any experience of self, there isn't any self. Right? Because he has to kind of come to that conclusion.
Right. Well, it's sort of like how can there be karma without a self to receive the fruits of the karma?
Right.
Yeah.
Or how does karma work if there isn't any self in
operation?
It seems like that question is going to get not decided without delving into it at all. And if there's a...
Well, I think what the Buddha is doing is coming back to the because the assumption. Is the assumption of that one actually needs to have a self in order for karma to ripen or to have fruit, that there actually has to be something. But that fundamental assumption is the seed of the problem itself. So that with the And I think one of the things is that what the Buddha is not, say, the law of karma and the reaping the fruits of karma are separate from the sense of self or not self, and one of the because what it assumes is that it takes a nihilistic. It goes to either one of the extreme in the sense that if for karma to ripen, then there must be an eternal self. If there's not an eternal self, then it must be a nihilistic perspective, which there is no fruits of karma, and that's where in terms of atta. Is your eternalist view of eternal, and then vitrakta is the sort of negation of self, which is a nihilistic view. But anatta is your middle way of a non-self, in the sense that nothing is worth clinging to self because it's the assumption of self that is the problem, as opposed to. When looking at the different forms of clinging, you've got gamupatan, sort of a attachment to sensual desire. You've got Sila Bhadra Upadhan, attachment to precepts and practices. You've got Ditta Upadhan, attachment to views. And then you've got Attavada Upadhana, which is sort of the... it's not Atta Upadhana. It's Attavada Upadhana. It's sort of like the doctrine of self or the belief in self. So that the belief in self, the attachment to the belief in self is the problem, as opposed to, say, like Atta Upadhana's attachment to self. Because the self doesn't actually have a solid basis for its reality. It's an assumption. And we assume it in feeling, in form, feeling, perception, mental formations, or consciousness. In one way or another, we assume a self. So karma, of course, is still going to play itself out because of that assumption and the bringing together of that perception of selfhood. But that's what the Buddha is saying. The problem is the perception. The problem is the clinging. The problem is the assumed nature of self.
So another discourse is where there's talk about wrong view. And one of the ways that wrong view is illustrated is by the view that there's no mother, there's no father, there's no this world. The talk about beings being reborn is just a conventional use of language. And he's not talking about cells being reborn.
The thing is, again, self is the... I mean, there's a continuity of identity which is at the root of the rebirth process, really. But there is this continuity of beings that assume a selfhood, but the underlying problem is that assumption. And the actual, the insight that is liberating is the insight into that assumption. So it isn't as if there's, because Atta is like a solid, eternal principle of a continuity of identity. But the basis of identity is in these five aspects of form, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness. And each of them is impermanent, unstable, changing. So that there can't, in a logical sense, what the Buddha is using, just the logic, you can't have a solid sense of self that is based only on impermanent, unstable, changing pieces and bits and pieces. That's why the image of the chariot is that you've got a chariot, but the chariot is built up from all sorts of different bits and pieces. So that what you've got is a name or a designation, and all of its component parts are actually impermanent and changing. So that all you've got is the actual name. You don't have anything in substance that is the it is ongoing and is solid and stable.
If I recall correctly, the simile of the flame is right next to that too, that chariot simile where is the flame burning in the beginning of the night, the same flame burning in the middle of the night, the same flame burning at the end of the night. And it's not that there is or is not a flame. It's just that the whole assumption is completely relevant to the fact that there's a continuity of action.
Yeah, there's all sorts of causes and conditions that are constantly changing. And And then, yeah, we make an assumption of solidity and eternal, and that's the problem. Not that there is a being that is reborn and reaps the fruits of karma, but the problem is the assumption we make of that continuity.